Hey there! Did you know Kroger always gives you savings and rewards on top of our lower-than-low prices? And when you download the Kroger app, you'll enjoy over $500 in savings every week with digital coupons. And don't forget fuel points to help you save up to $1 per gallon at the pump. Want to save even more? With a Boost membership, you'll get double fuel points and free delivery. So shop and save big at Kroger today. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Savings may vary by state. Restrictions apply. See site for details.
This episode is brought to you by Bumble. So, you want to find someone you're compatible with, specifically someone who's ready for a serious connection, totally open to having kids in the future, is a tall, rock-climbing Libra, and loves rom-coms with vegan pizzas on Tuesdays just as much as you do. Bumble knows that you know exactly what's right for you. So, whatever it is you're looking for, Bumble's features can help you find it. Date now on Bumble.
Welcome to Time to Talk. I'm Alex Holmes. Let's get into the show. Let's get started. So, first of all, I want to say thank you to everyone who tuned in to the show last week. It was a relaunch. It was on World Mental Health Day. It was an incredibly vulnerable thing for me to do, to come back and start these shows again in a completely new way, especially when I'm reading people's work and utilizing people's work to make my point, to make, you know, to land the case. And I think that sometimes I can get in my own head about how informed I should be, how important it is that I'm, the work that I'm doing, and get put a lot of pressure on myself to make sure it's all perfect. And you know what? As the one energy I want to bring to this podcast is that we need to get rid of this pressure, this personal pressure that we put on ourselves to be amazing, to be great, to be all this stuff. But if we can take every opportunity as a learning curve and a learning process, then I think that we can do so much more and bring so much more value to our communities, to ourselves, to our people, and to the ones that we love and care about, and you know, foster deeper and greater connections. So I want to say thank you for joining me on this journey, waiting for me patiently, coming back, and even those of you who are new to the show and are wanting to find something new, to hear men speaking about something completely different, or a man speaking about something different, I just want to say thank you for being courageous. Thank you for taking a chance on me. I appreciate you. And I'm looking forward to growing the show with you. If you're new to the show, welcome. This is Time to Talk. I'm Alex Holmes. I'm an author. I'm a podcast host. I'm a therapist. And I work very specifically in the realms of loneliness, men and loneliness, and young boys and loneliness, and working to create avenues for men and boys to articulate their emotions in ways that are not presently done in society. Yes, there are groups, there are active people out there really working with men to support them in this journey of emotional awareness and emotional development. So I'm working a lot on emotional health and emotional well-being of men. I wrote a book called Time to Talk, How Men Think About Love, Belonging and Connection. And this is where the podcast was spawned. Within this podcast, I want it to be a listener led and a listener focused podcast, as well as me speaking about particular elements and areas. So if you want the full unedited conversation with the guests that I have on here, there's a segment within this podcast called Time to Talk with Friends, where I share a small part of the conversation that, or a longer conversation that I have with guests. But if you want to hear the full unedited version, join me on Supercast. I call that my gated community. And for just £5 a month, you can get the full archive of unedited episodes, peek behind this podcast curtain, and looking and listening to the conversations, the full hour-long conversation I have with the amazing people that joined me on the show, as well as just watching the videos and, you know, any other things I'm going to add to that as it develops. But for now, £5 a month, you get more things. So you can listen to it on there. But yeah, generally, this is a message just to say thank you. And please leave a review and a rating on Spotify or anywhere that you listen to podcasts, the best place you listen to podcasts. And I would appreciate that greatly. So last week, I spoke about World Mental Health Day and about whether mental health is a global priority yet. So I want to say shout out to Dr. Sana, whose article I used as reference point to the conversation. And they really connected with me online and said that, you know, the reflections were good, and I appreciated them for, you know, actively listening to the show. That's always very scary and always very vulnerable when you're talking about somebody's work and what they've said. But, you know, I really want to make sure that I bring the right level of intrigue and curiosity and relevance and energy and humor to the podcasts. I don't want it to ever be too serious, but I am talking about serious topics. So I just want there to be the right balance and the right level of engagement and connection. But yeah, all that being said, let's get on with the show. An awful people that have listened last week's episode, I have watered the plants since. I know some of you got onto me for not watering this plant. The plant is fine. I moved her into the sunshine. She was really dwelling in the darkness and drooping and just saying, why? I've moved her into sunshine. I move her with the sun as it reaches different parts of my room at different times of the day. So rest assured, she's being watered. Okay, let's get on with the show. Okay, so this week I have been doing a lot of reading and a lot of researching and just seeing what people are talking about. And I came across a clip on a podcast that mentioned an article that went viral in August about men being lonely. Now, as I said in the introduction, is that I, as a therapist and someone who works in mental health and as a writer and author, I have been studying and researching, and I'm at the very, very beginnings of this area of work for me. And want to really unpack male loneliness and loneliness in boys and how this affects the way that we interact with other people, what this looks like, and what it can end up becoming. We know that there are rising suicide rates in young men, and how much this affects black men, how much this affects queer men, how much this affects working class men, how much this affects high-powered men, what that looks like, and just the level to the extent of male loneliness. So it might be that I'm holding this conversation over several episodes, but I'm really passionate about understanding what this loneliness is and what this loneliness looks like in men too. But the article that I am looking at made aware of was an article on Psychology Today called The Rise of Lonely Single Men. Men need to address their deficits to meet healthier relationship expectations. This was written by a psychologist called Greg Matos. It's peer reviewed and all of this stuff, which most articles in Psychology Today have to be. And his key points were that dating opportunities for heterosexual men are diminishing. As relationship standards rise, men represent approximately 62% of dating app users, lowering their chances for matches, and men need to address skills deficits to meet healthier relationship expectations. So we can pause that conversation there. But before we get into that, I would like to tell you just a bit more about the Time to Talk project, because that is what the lifeblood of what I'm doing is. And so this year I've really knuckled down and wanted to get to grips with the exact kind of work that I wanted to do and the kind of things I want to do outside of my therapeutic practice and stuff. It all is connected, but aside from working as a therapist with clients in that way, I run a company called the Time to Talk Project. So this is where the podcast stems from, birthing the book, So putting it all together under this project to really look at how we can move through this experience of masculine loneliness, male loneliness, loneliness in men, right? And so I aim to focus on this, on tackling this endemic, this epidemic, you know, of loneliness on a variety of levels. And a lot of the things that I challenge with this is that this conversation, especially with reading Dr. Matos's piece, is really focused on a very particular kind of man. And it's usually the heterosexual, white, middle-class man. And of late, it has been very much to do with millennials. And then we talk about the older men and all this different stuff and whatnot. But we never have this conversation about changing behaviors, really. We never sit down and think, okay, so men are lonely because they have these deficits. And even in this article, there's no explanation as to how we can help men change these deficits, grow, like challenge and stuff. And I always come from these positions of from a compassionate place, because I think that you don't know what you don't know until you do not know it, right? And if you're conditioned to live blissfully unaware in your own experiences, and everything kind of ends up working out in the way that you're taught how to be a man or how to relate to people, how to engage in that way, if it all works out to be fine, quote unquote, and you kind of check the markers of manhood, which is, you know, if you are heterosexual, getting married, having the kids, having the house, having the money, being successful in that way, doing all of that stuff, building that community around you, well, you, but the idea of you, the idea of the family, it's no surprise that the longevity of these relationships don't last that long, or it's, according to Dr. Matos, is a failure to launch anyway, because, you know, you occupy a huge space on the dating apps, but there's less of a pool to kind of get or meet relevant matches. I mean, you do meet a relevant match, you are encountering emotional blockages because you can't step into the space wholeheartedly or authentically. So I have a vested interest in this area, and I focus on the breadth of the male community, the masculine community, in a way that I don't see a lot of people doing. I love to empower people. I love to empower people, get them to fight for something rather than against something. I want them to fight for their freedom. I want them to be able to fight for real connection, real love, real sense of belonging outside, away from this loneliness, like talking to young kids around what trust is, around how they navigate their lives at this stage and what choices they can make to kind of be better, more informed, more wholehearted young boys, right? And what that means for men who can be more engaged parents, engaged husbands and partners, and engaged brothers and siblings and cousins, because and engaged colleagues and whatnot, because it's not just about how you deliver yourself at home or how you deliver yourself as a father or whatnot. We're not going to meet, they're not going to hit the mark every single time, but we have to be able to be intentionally trying to make this step and take this opportunity to be connected and well-informed and try, and really try. So with one, my one big intention with this podcast, with the Time to Talk project, is to look at the impacts of my book, Time to Talk, How Men Think About Love, Belonging and Connection, and the key points that come from there. Like, there's six real man myths in the book that are really specific to how a lot of men think. And, you know, it starts off with real men don't doubt themselves as one myth. Real men are fearless go-getters as another. Real men don't cry as a big one. A lot of people believe this, this stuff. Real men have no worries about their bodies. Again, Real Men Never Fail, Real Men Are Lone Wolves. And the book is, you know, really structured around that, those areas of the male experience. I mean, there were so many myths that I put down when I was working with my editor with the book. There were so many myths that I put down, but we had to boil it down to six. And I was like, how do you boil it down to six? So those are the six that we left with, but unpacking those elements to really kind of get to the depth and the core of what loneliness looks like in men. And the rates of loneliness in men is really high. There are articles out there. So outside of Dr. Matos's article, there's an article in the Times by Greg Hurst, the social affairs editor, back in 2019, where he wrote, you know, based on a YouGov poll, found that 18% of men did not have a close friend and 32% had no one they counted as a best friend. And while it says the figures were considerably higher for those, for women, with 12% of women saying they did not have close friends, 24% saying they lacked a best friend, the online survey weighted to represent the British population found that men were less likely to say they felt lonely, with 44% of men said they were lonely sometimes, often, or all of the time, compared to 50% of women. Now, when we start to kind of have this conversation around it, this is the point of time to talk. It's like I was in a conversation with somebody recently, and it was like we're having this conversation around talking and around what it means to be talking. And this stuff, and they're like, "Oh, you don't not talk. You say you want to talk, but you're not talking about stuff." And I'm like, "I'm talking about this stuff. I'm being very clear about where I'm at emotionally with this. I'm always very clear about this. But in this situation, the person wasn't listening to what I was saying. And he was a man, but he wasn't listening to what I was saying. He was very much like he was seeking to fix rather than to understand. And I think that this is where we start to come up with this stuff. We start to feel really misunderstood, and then we stop the talking because we feel like if we're going to talk and nobody understands us anyway, then what's the point of us saying how we feel about something? I was watching Married at First Sight. Don't judge me, but I'm watching the American one. I've not watched the British one yet. There's a couple on the American one called Miguel and Lindy, and while they have their issues, and I have my own personal reflections on these both, on both of these this couple, I have my reflections on certain people. There was an incident where Miguel was trying to connect and say, "Look, this is the poetry that I've written. You'll listen to it." Lindy was like, "Yeah, babe, tell me the poetry." They were on this carriage and there were all these animals around and all this different stuff that was going on. And he was, and sometimes it's funny because of the way it's edited as well. But he was like, "Okay, I want to recite this poetry. My wife is like interested, so I'm going to just say it." So he's in the middle of this poem. Whether the poem was good or bad, I'm not even going to say, but he was in the middle of this poem. And every time he got to a point in the poem, she was like, "Oh, look, the bunny. Oh, look, the deer. Oh, this is great." Da, da, da. And he was like, "Okay, so you try again." And then she would be like, and he would say this poetry, he would recite this poetry. And then she'd be like, "Oh, look at this bird. Oh, this plant is so beautiful." Da, 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 da. And it just continued that way. And then it was like when he reacted, though, to that, because he kind of went into himself. He was like, "You know, I'm going to finish this poem, but she's not really into what I'm saying, so I'm just going to leave it." And then later they sat down, there's this plenary, and they kind of chatted about the day and how it went on. And you know how these shows go. It's like, you know, it's going to end up being something. And then he was like, "Yeah, but I don't know how I can be, whether it's worth me being vulnerable with you. Because are you even going to listen to what I'm saying in the first place?" And she was like, what? So I can't like look at the flowers. I can't appreciate the stuff like while I'm listening to you. And he was like, but no, it's not even about that. I didn't feel listened to. I didn't feel like you were listening to me. And that was one example how like a lot of men kind of show up in these spaces. They don't necessarily feel connected in that, you know, he's a very emotionally mature man. And I think it's so mature, he knows how to word certain things, which can come across quite manipulative in some ways. But he was bearing himself in a way that was really trying to showcase the depths of him and his vulnerability. And because it's a vulnerable thing, reciting something that you are creating and putting together and sharing that with somebody that you love or claim to love or want to kind of become emotionally attached to and deeper. And for that person to dismiss that is quite, or feel as if that person is dismissing that, is quite a challenging thing to do. It's quite a challenging experience. And I think it's just some of these things, when we start to look at these conversations around loneliness, I'm really concerned that we are positioning it as men being completely in the wrong. And don't get me wrong, there are a lot of men out there who aren't actively invested in doing the work. And in the end of Dr. Matos's article, he does mention the best ways for people to do this or to build up the relationship skill sets to go to therapy and this lot. And I'm just like, well, that's not always an option for a lot of people. It is an option, but it's not always a lot of option. Therapy itself can be quite pricey. It's a quite intimidating process, and you shouldn't be, unless you are, depending on the context, it's not something I feel that you should really be forced to go into. But there is something in that. I would have looked at it and I would have thought to myself, okay, so yeah, men need to kind of dig deep and, you know, find out what these relationship skill set is and what this deficit is and how they can bear themselves to themselves, and then also then kind of approach a conversation that isn't necessarily stagnated or stunted or frustrating for the people that they are, you know, hoping, I would like to think, hoping to form and build a life with. But at the same time, what is the conditioning? What is the conditioning? Like, we have to turn the lens around. What is the relationship that they've had with their siblings? What is the relationship they've had with their parents? Where have they come from? We have to look at how their parents and teachers and this experience has kind of showed them who to be and how to be. And there was some research from the Campaign to End Loneliness. Very sad, you know, that although women were likely to report feelings of loneliness, that did not mean that they were more lonely. Because studies have found that men were unwilling to admit to isolation because of the stigma attached to it. You're a lonely man, boo-hoo, sort of thing. And I listened to a podcast recently, another one, and they were like, you know, and they were like, a lot of, you know, the nature of the podcast is quite brash itself when it comes to speaking about men, but it was just like, which, you know, in some ways it can be disarming. But yeah, that's not the energy that I want to bring to this podcast, but it's also just very telling about the kind of impact that men who are lonely or men who aren't aware of themselves have on other people. And I think that if we are not addressing our loneliness in ways that are conducive to really helping us engage and support people better, like, lonely men go online and express their anger online because it's an unfiltered, unaccountable space where people can just go on Twitter, create an account and start shouting at people. You can go into forums to start shouting at people because culturally, you know, angry men is not necessarily something that you want to see on a day-to-day. It's just something that is kind of reserved for football matches and Twitter. And I think that when you demonize emotion itself, it pushes itself into particular areas of our lives, and then it affects how we relate to other people. If you say, oh, don't get angry, don't get sad, don't cry, don't, even to the point of, oh, don't get too, I mean, I was told, don't get too excited, because it might not end up the way that you expect it to be. I was told that by a man in my life. Like, I was told that. I was told not to cry. I was told not to be vulnerable. I was told not to get angry. I was told so many different things on the spectrum of emotion. Like, I was told all of these different things to the point where I'm like, well, what can I do? Who can I be? And this is the point. It makes you feel lonely because you cannot relate to the people around you. And the definition of loneliness is interesting. It's a perceived mismatch between the quality or quantity of social connections that a person has and what they would like to have. I mean, you don't have to be on your own to feel lonely. You might feel lonely in a relationship or while spending time with friends or family, especially if you don't feel understood or cared for by the people around you. Some other people might choose to be alone and live happily without much social contact. Loneliness can be characterized by its intensity or how strongly it is felt, which can change from moment to moment and over different durations of time. And I think there's one thing I really want to kind of bring to these next iterations of episodes and this conversation. I do want to look at what men believe about themselves, and what we believe about ourselves really dictates how we relate to one another, because the whole purpose of this thing is that we are figuring out how we can be better understood and how we can relate better to other people. Yeah. And if the playing field has been set up for generations where men don't need to worry nor care about any of that, then now when we start to think about, I'm single and I'm looking for somebody and I want to connect with them, but I have none of the resources, none of the skill sets, none of the things that they require from me. How do I know when someone's going to take advantage of me? How do I know if I'm setting myself up for failure? Like, I've been told that I can't fail. So how do I know that I've been setting myself up for failure? Am I a good enough man? Am I somebody who people want to be with? These are questions I've asked myself over periods of time. Am I somebody that somebody wants to be with? Do I even want to be with myself right now? Do I even like myself, let alone love myself? And we don't really hear a lot of men talking about this. And I'm happy to be the guy that talks about this stuff, because like, why else? Do I love who I am? Do I care enough about myself to be able to then care enough about other people? And not in a narcissistic, we're going to get into narcissism at some point in life, but not in a narcissistic way about loving yourself, but loving you. Like, really just appreciating the parts of you that are bad, that are good, not a self-inflated sense of self, but, you know, just generally just loving who you are the same way that you love your parents, or you love your friends, or you love your siblings, or you love your children, or you love your partner. Like, you love your husband, you love your wife, you know, you love your person, like, or the same way you're just in love with life generally. Like, do you love yourself in those areas, in those ways? What is it that we believe about ourselves that is causing us to remain inward and to remain empty when it comes to searching for who we want to be in this world, you know? What is it? What is going on? And, my whole process is appreciating that for men, for us as men, we need to take an honest look at how we're doing and come to terms with the fact that, you know, we can feel lonely and we can struggle and we do sometimes need companionship and intimacy and help and connection with people. And that is fine. It's absolutely okay. But it's not weak or pathetic or a burden on anybody, because you've got to do the work. You've got to look at yourself and think to yourself, okay, cool, what am I lacking? And I think this level of self-awareness and this self-reflection is the one thing that is missing from a lot of men's daily lives. It's this reflection on self to really say, rah, actually, what am I saying and what am I doing that does not align with who I am right now? And in therapy, we call that congruence, right? Is who I am saying who I am being? And it's just like, is there a line? Is there a misalignment there, you know? In my day-to-day friendships and relationships and whatnot, I can be very, very sharp-tongued. I can be very sarcastic. I can be very self-deprecating. I can be just straight up, just different, right? But at the same time, I appreciate that that's who I am in particular contexts, but that's also definitely who I am. And I look at stuff and I know when I'm joking. The people that love me know when I'm joking. They know when I'm playing about, or they know that this is part of my character and when I'm being playful and whatnot. And it's never, and you know, there was a point in time when it was there to be cruel and it was there to be mean and it was there to, and it was utilizing this space to really, not this space, the podcast space, but just where I was, is using that space to punch down and avoid what I needed to deal with internally, right? And I had to go through a process of understanding why is it that I feel comfortable punching down? And when I say punching down, I mean you look for humor in the way, in the deficiencies of other people, or you look for the deficiencies of other people to kind of feel better about yourself. And I just think that that is something that is, you know, that is not, there's something not right with that, with regards to men and banter and wanting to feel like they belong and all of these different areas. And too many of us have been subject to this level of, I want to say bullying, this level of indoctrination as to this is how men communicate, and there are ways for us to restructure, reframe, rethink how we deal with that. And it all starts with how we believe ourselves to be, what we believe about ourselves, our own personal beliefs about what it means to be us together. And I think about very much, like, a lot around the first chapter of my book, which is talking about self-doubt and self-acceptance, and looking at our inner critic. And when our inner critic is the persuasive negative internal voice that so often tries to take over our lives by telling us we're not good enough, we're not strong enough, we're not manly enough, or anything. We're not sexy enough, we're not good looking enough, we're not confident enough, we're not any of this stuff. And the whole process of Time to Talk and the whole process of that is to really try to find a way to restructure and reframe the way we think about ourselves so that we can not bring that into a relationship or into our, when I say relationships, I speak about it on a general term. Like, I'm not speaking about it just solely on a romantic relationship. I'm speaking about as a friend. I'm speaking about when we're looking for deep and impactful friendships and connections. I'm speaking about as a brother, what I'm like with my siblings, as a cousin, as a colleague, as somebody who has to navigate this world by working with other people, you know, as a mentee and as a mentor, as a student, as a son, you know, how do I reframe and restructure how I think about myself so that I can show up and be the best possible version of myself for the world, you know? Like, and it's dark, it's tough. It's in the mud, it's in the trenches. You're down dirty, you're beaten up, you know? But like, in each of these areas and this road to connection and to growth and to understanding who we are and to doing all of that jazz, we come out of it the best possible way because we challenge the stuff that's going on with us. We look at who we are. We don't take ourselves for granted. We have a newfound appreciation for who we are and how we step into the world and what we say when we step into the world and who we say we are and whatnot. And it's not filled with an oppressive arrogance and ignorance that you see a lot of men on in public-facing platforms talking about. Because they love to talk about, oh, I'm this person, I'm that person, I'm that. And you know what? Confidence is fine. But confidence, when it borders ignorance and just straight up arrogance, is not conducive to a lot of things. But you can be confident in yourself, but you don't have to be overwhelming in that confidence, you know? That you can be confident in yourself and say, yeah, I know that I'm good at this. I know that I'm good at that. That doesn't take away from what you're good at. That doesn't take away from who you are. That doesn't take away from anything. If anything, my confidence should amplify what I see in you. And we can be confident together. It's not a battle. It's not something that I want to fight you on. And I think that is something, and that is the way that I'm approaching this understanding of loneliness and where men coming from and what we're trying to find and what we're looking for and how we're looking for it. But I'm going to get into beliefs, I'm going to get into responsibility, I'm going to get into intention, commitment, and kindness, and all this different stuff as we go through, and looking at what that looks like in different contexts with regard to male loneliness, because it's something that I'm really passionate about and I really want to see. And I think it goes further than saying men need to go to therapy. I think it goes further than that. I think we need to look at the, if anything from last episode is clear, it looks further than just being contained in an individualistic sense. It's a social understanding. It's a holistic way of understanding and looking at life. But yeah, I'm done talking. Let's take a break. All right, let's talk to friends. This segment is Time to Talk with Friends, where I speak to somebody who is a good friend of the show and has various amazing insights with regards to the area that we talk about and just their own personal journeys, whether it be about their books, their music, their career. I think it's a really interesting area to kind of chat to them about what they've been through and what they're going through and their life. As I said, the full unedited conversation will be on the Supercast, where you can go to timetotalk.supercast.com. This conversation is with Yomi Sade, and he is an award-winning Nigerian-British writer, and he is the recipient of the 2019 Gerwood Compton Poetry Fellowship, shortlisted for the Bruno International African Poetry Prize. His acclaimed one-man show, Coat, toured nationally to sold-out audiences, including the Brighton Festival, Roundhouse Camden, and the Battersea Arts Centre. In 2020, his libretto Remnant, written in collaboration with award-winning composer James B. Wilson and performed with Chineke Orchestra, premiered on BBC Radio 3. In 2021, his play, And Breathe, premiered at the Almeida Theatre to rave reviews. And he, like myself, was represented in a legion of amazing Black British male writers in the 2019 essay collection, Safe, 20 Ways to Be a Black Man in Britain Today. I know him, however, as a well-meaning, peaceable, and loving member of the Black British creative community. And I want you guys to have this listen to this segment of our conversation and he's talking about his new book, Mannerism, which came out this, looking at mannerism now.
Mm.
And yeah, we've spoken prior to this and in various forms, and you said it's taken you so long to get this together. And when you announced at the beginning of this episode, did all your accolades and all this stuff. Yeah. When you announced this book was dropping, I was like, debut book?
Yeah.
Question mark, what? I was thinking this would be second or third. And I was genuinely confused. I started Googling and thinking, did you mean, where are the books? Because I thought that you had it. What did you want for this book? And I would love to hear a poem or whichever poem that you feel you want to share with the podcast. But I also just want to know, what do you want for this book, and how do you want people to see it, or what do you want people to feel when they engage with it?
Wow, man. I think you're not alone. A lot of people have been kind of shocked. They've been like, oh, your first book? It's mad. But that needed time. Prior to this, I was doing a lot of stuff with live musicians. It was in music, so I have an album, I have an EP, and then I branched out into writing my first solo show.
Yeah, you have been around here for a long time.
Yeah, branched out into doing my first solo show. And even at a point when I'd done the solo show, it was a situation where, oh, I could work on a collection of poems now, but I think what was being asked of me was just to work on a solo show first. And in hindsight, I wouldn't change that. I would still stick to what it is, because forms of like theatre and stuff, I've incorporated those skills in mannerism. Do you know what I mean? I haven't written a play, but I've utilised these skills to have it in here. What do I want? Boy, it's such a big question. I think I had a moment where I looked around and I was doing a lot of like reading of different things in terms of how do I articulate these experiences of masculinity as being a black man, that type thing. How do I articulate it? And I just wanted to share experiences that I can just sit with the likes of yourself, some of the man them, and just be like, rah, these references, it's slapping. I long for an opportunity to just sit and just kind of get into some of these stories. I'm not trying to kind of change the world, but I do want to start conversations. Do you know what I mean? I've never entered anything I've done with like wanting to have solutions. Do you know? But I'm always wanting to raise things to people's attention that there's so much that my body stores. There's so much that I would want to unleash, whether it's rage or whatever it is, but that I still feel like I need to hold it in.
Mm.
And I look around me and I see the permission is given to X, Y, and Z to just be free with their emotions, whereas I still feel the pressure of just holding it in. And at some point, all of that either implodes, or when it does absolutely come out, it comes out in so late that it's a fit of rage. You know, I have a close friend that is serving a long time in jail. Because on a first offense, based on everything that's been, you know, kept in, at the first chance he got to kind of like release that, he's locked up.
Mm.
And I'm like, how did we get there? How did it get to that point where you didn't necessarily feel safe enough to speak to me as one of your friends?
Mm.
Or those around you, for us to understand what you was going through.
Mm-hmm.
And I hope, you know, this book, it opens the window for some of that to come out. And I'm excited at that. And, you know, going back to accolade stuff, I tend to get excited, but internally, but I don't celebrate that excitement outwardly. So it's in the same way that you're going through this kind of process of the bios and talking on it and reading it the first time, I find myself like, Yoms, be excited. You wrote this book. It's coming out. Be excited, you know, because in my head, I'm just like, there's still work to do.
Mm.
But but I'm not allowing myself to sit and just be like, and that's what I've been doing recently. I've just been picking up this book and I've just been reading it front to end, like reading it and being like, yo, that's a sick poem, my guy.
Yeah.
Well done.
Yeah.
You know?
And it's reigniting, mm-hmm. you know, when you read back the stuff, and you got some amazing poems in here.
Thank you.
Because it's like, well, for me, when I read back some parts of my book, I don't remember writing it.
Yeah.
But I know I've written it.
Yeah.
So I'm always reading it as somebody who doesn't necessarily know the person who wrote that. And I'm just like, oh, that's very interesting.
I know.
You know, it's part of you.
I know we're in convo, but super quick. When you do read back, are there certain parts where you're just like, yo, Alex, is that you? Do you mind speaking
at real quick? No, there are some lines. I look at it and I'm just like, where did I dig that deep from? Like the depths of my longing and my need. I was like, to share that. I was like, wow. Because there were elements of the book that my parents didn't even know about.
Crazy.
And my cousins and my friends, they were like, this is very like vulnerable. Mm. And I was like, but I've been saying this. Yeah, so it's either not asked the questions or you've not listened, or I've not felt that I could do any of those things.
Yeah.
But it's when you mentioned about the freedom. Mm-hmm. And it's why I do a lot of the work I do with, like, as a therapist and then kind of this podcast and in the area that I'm working in now.
Yeah.
It's understanding that freedom.
Yeah.
It's understanding that we can do that and it shouldn't have to get to that point of just releasing it to then release it, but then the consequences and the stakes are higher because we've not been able or felt able to adequately put it out into the world and really sit with what we're going through and kind of, you know, put that together. And it's unfortunate that when we look to a lot of men in society, that the ones that end up in those situations are the people that don't know what to do with it.
Yeah.
Because it's energy. And I always think of like Goku or something. Just when I was younger, I used to watch them just like
burst out in modes.
Yeah.
Burst out in there.
Yeah. So what poems did you want to share?
So I wanted to, there's this poem, "For Black Boys You Idolize Mr. Marcus More Than Their Fathers." Mm. And I think it's an important one for me because I remember distinctly a point where, like, sex is something that me and a man them talk about, but we don't talk about. And the whole thought process of, like, intimacy and, the conversations are more around, I met such and such, even from like secondary school days, it's like, oh, what, did she come to the yard? Blah, 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 blah. Yeah, man. Oh, you done your thing? Yeah. But that's as far as the conversation goes. Do you know what I mean? Like, and just the whole idea of like, if you one was to even discuss like condom sizes, for example, it's like, bro, why are you asking about condom sizes for? What's wrong with you? Do you know what I mean? Like, it's almost like, oh, if you dare to ask, well, what size do you use type thing? Like, it's straight. No, we don't. Mm. That's not a conversation we talk about. And I'm just like, so where do you go for that learning? If it's not from the core group in which that you should be having these conversations from. And Mr. Marcus is a porn star. And to some degree, for a generation of black men, this was the template. This was the go-to when these kind of conversations, I felt, couldn't necessarily be had. And I feel like Mr. Marcus was almost, again, for some generations of black men, the most kind of prominent guy in the whole template of what masculinity is. where their fathers wasn't around. So, which also means there's that the whole nuance of how they approach sex, intimacy, blah, 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 was kind of chiseled around this, which kind of fed into conversations.
Okay.
For black boys, you idolize Mr. Marcus more than their fathers. Black boys that watched Mr. Marcus having sex in his birthday suit, wearing Tim's and a baseball cap, iconic. Black boys that understood intimacy through VHS tapes, DVDs, LimeWire, and word of mouth. Black boys with questions regarding their bodies, who were too embarrassed to ask what to do when their hearts beats fast and blood rushed to their penises. Black boys never voicing their queries. Black boys with questions about masturbation, making themselves a bad taste in Mandem's mouth, something rancid, something other than a boy that's ready. Boy is not men. Boy is not Mr. Marcus, whose physique speaks before his mouth opens. Mr. Marcus, who when he edges, tightens his ass until he arrives, a rite of passage met through time. The moment boy's young selves die, that shedding, that low, slow grunt of mourning, and excel as deep as Mr. Marcus's. Black boy's fast-tracked into manhood, hands on the steering wheel, foot on the accelerator with instructions to keep on straight, their heads barely reaching over the dashboard, the world looking on as they crash into everything in sight, police, teachers, parents, lovers, black boys who held confessions like unguarded candles to their flammable bodies. Black boys who idolized Mr. Marcus, a porn star who raised a generation more than some fathers did. He was there at a button's click, could be paused at night and still be found there in the morning. He was present, gathering dust as we aged, as we watched him. Under this moon's gaze, we watched him, this shooting star. Black boys who took notes when clinics felt too awkward to go into for advice, when sex education in school didn't do enough to educate on sex. Black boys nervously laughed, putting condoms on bananas. Black boys misguided. Black boys taking matters into their own hands. Black boys chirping on road or after a rave. Black boys boasting they beat, they fucked, they banged, yet never spoke about kissing, touching, hugging, foreplay. Black boys that never talked, never knew how to deal with broken hearts. Black boys born in sadness, rejection, angst into rage. Black boys violent. Black boys frightened. Black boys never sharing fears about sex, about loss, about whether they were ready. Oh, black boys, the world assumes you to be ready. Oh, black boys, how fucked up it is to think that your idolization of Mr. Marcus, the absence of some fathers, these ways of living, that all of this was normal.
Wow. So much said in between the silence of those conversations, right?
Proper.
And never had those conversations at school.
At all?
Never.
Like, if you considered, like, yeah, even with your, like, friendship groups, whether specifically just like black men specifically, yeah, yeah. Do you recall having, yeah, like you were saying, like any of those kind of conversations?
One person, one guy who talked a lot, he mentioned, like, he was the first one to get a girlfriend and he was the first one to do all this stuff, and he would then boast about all of that.
Mm.
But there was never a conversation about, were you nervous? What was that like? Like, you know, how do you initiate that? Like, it was just this thing that should be known and should be, and always should be done to somebody else.
Yeah.
And that was a real disconcerting thing, because, like, the majority of the guys in my year were very much just like, yeah, like, you know, when these things happen, they happen, sort of thing. But there was one guy who just had to say, all of this stuff. Never discussed porn.
Mm-hmm.
Never discussed it. Like, there was just so much we just didn't talk about, which is why it was kind of easy. Like, on reflection, which is why it's kind of easy for me to leave school with not many friends.
Yeah,
because I didn't feel connected to anybody anyway.
Mm.
Which is a very which is something that I've had to work through quite a bit.
And the more I think on it, the more I'm like, what would have happened if the space was there for those conversations to be had? Less about who you done X with, but more about what does the preparation for that look like, even if it's not for now. What is it? Yeah, how to be ready for this in the future. And I don't think there was any space where there was a comfortable point where that conversation could just happen without the anxiety or the fear of being kind of looked at as though that, like, you're into men. Do you know what I mean? Which is a different kind of anxiety. Like, to be like, the idea that, oh, would you, well, how are you going to talk to me about masturbation? Like, why are you talking? We don't talk about that. Do you know what I mean? Without being seen to be, like, into men. Like, I don't know how else to kind of broach that. And that kind of anxiety, right?
Yeah, it's that fear of that mad assumption, fear. Even if you are, or not, like, you try to hide that in a way. So it's just very strange. It's a performance, as I've always said. Yeah. It's a performance.
Yeah, and all you want to do is just strip that kind of performance and being like, "Raw." It's not like we're not friends for that X amount of years. Don't get me wrong. There are men that have the, and the joke is, there's something when it pertains to black men specifically in these conversations. Mm. Like I've been to many a raves where I've seen white boys at the end of the rave, kissing each other on the lips because they're drunk as hell, like slapping each other's ass, the most wild behavior type thing. But let me now try go kiss my brethren on the lips or whatever it is in a drunken behavior. You might just be thinking, bro, what the? But I'm just like, so I think there's something really like interesting in that, in that conversation to be had, to kind of unearth what that uncomfortability might be.
The elements of freedom and the spectrum of sexuality, 100%. Especially, it's just never considered
100%
around in black masculinity conversations. Oh man, like, guys, you're gonna enjoy this book. I don't know why, you know what I mean, like, I don't know why it's like his debut book. All right, I got one final question and we're gonna have to wrap up because of time, and like, you know, I could sit here for like 3 hours.
It's gone quick. I'm comfy, I'm all up. Socks, took off my shoes, all sorts. I'm chilling. I'm like, oh,
and the glasses match your hair. What is this?
Do you know what it is? Also, like, super before your last question, like, I think I made a conscious decision to grow my hair there.
All right, guys, thank you so much for joining me on the show this week. There are no questions for this week. There will be questions next week. But if you want to hear more of that conversation, there's so much we talk about. I talk about my white ancestor that contacted me during the pandemic. Talk about Yomi getting in touch with his dad after a period of estrangement. Talk about Yomi's experience coming to the UK when he was younger and what that experience was like, learning English, getting into writing, why he starts writing, his experience as a father. We get into loads of different stuff. So if you want to hear the full unedited episode and the full unedited conversation, head over to timetotalk.supercast.com and subscribe. $5 a month and you can get access to the full conversation. It's a really, really fulfilling convo, and it's really funny as well. So I would say jump on that if you want to hear. If you want to submit a question, the form is in the show notes and you can submit that in there. And I look forward to reading your questions and going through it to answer them. But before we end, I'm going to finish with a note to self. And this note to self comes from page 51 of my book, Time to Talk, How Men Think About Love, Belonging, and Connection. And I wrote this on the last page. Let me just read the last bit. Acceptance over comparison. My friend Alan, a 36-year-old from London, he used to regularly self-harm. I would meet him for a coffee and his arms would be all scarred. When I broached the subject, a look of shame would come across his face. He felt he was letting people down because he wasn't where he felt he should be as a man, He was still living at home, working in a job he didn't want to be in, and he hadn't found any guiding light or passion in life. When I asked him, "What are the things you love about yourself?" he simply answered, "I don't." And it followed that he didn't feel that anyone else could really love and accept him either. His inner critic, in this case, one formed by having been heavily criticized and emotionally neglected as he grew up, was doing quite some job at making him feel worthless. This friend and I fell out of regular contact after a while, but when I saw him about a year later, he was in a good space. He had moved jobs, he was working on more enjoyable projects, and was much happier in himself. He admitted that he still struggled at times, but that he now knew this was okay and normal for many, so there was no need to punish himself for it. The key for him had been learning to accept where he was in life instead of obsessively worrying about it, comparing himself to other guys, or beating himself up about it. This willingness to just accept himself, wild thoughts and all, had created space and energy for him to start to make the changes he wanted to make in life. Note to self: how I navigate the world starts with how I think about and speak to myself today, tomorrow, and the next day. And that is the end of the show. Don't forget to rate, review, and subscribe. Make sure that if you want to contact me, just head over to alexholmes.co and connect with me in any way, shape, or form through there. If you want to hear the full unedited version of the episode and the interview, head over to timetotalk.supercast.com. And if you wanted to submit a question, please throw it into the Google form in the show notes. I look forward to catching you all next week. And again, it's a huge pleasure to be here with you each week and for you to listen. And I appreciate you all. I look forward to exploring belonging next week. Talk soon.